Welcome to Leader Talks with Anne-Marie Pham, where I sit down with thought leaders across Canada to discuss the topic of diversity, equity, and inclusion. This podcast aims to create awareness, showcase a variety of perspectives, and inspire courage for all of us to create more diverse, equitable, and inclusive workplaces and communities for all. I am your host, Anne-Marie Pham, CEO of the Canadian Centre for Diversity and Inclusion. As CCDI celebrates its 10-year anniversary in 2023, we welcome you to today's episode of Leader Talks Season 2. Hello, everyone, and welcome to our podcast. Today, I want to take a moment to commemorate Transgender Day of Remembrance. It's an important day for all of us, and I wanted to dedicate a special podcast for this day. And Transgender Day of Remembrance falls on November 20th every year. And it's been set aside in Canada and many countries around the world to recognize those individuals who have been killed due to ignorance and hatred, targeted because those individuals were trans or gender non-conforming. And the first event took place in 1999 in San Francisco to honor Rita Hester, who had been brutally murdered the previous year. I think it's important for us as a country to take a moment to commemorate this important day, to reflect on the role that each and every one of us needs to play to create a more inclusive Canada for all. And we could not think of a better guest to invite to this special podcast than Marnie Panas. Marnie, welcome to our podcast. It's really an honor and a pleasure for us to have you with us today. Let me just give a very brief introduction about Marnie. She has a very, very long bio, and I know I won't be able to give it justice. But Marnie holds a bachelor's degree in health administration. Marnie is a Canadian certified inclusion professional with the CCIP designation. She is currently the senior manager of diversity, equity, and inclusion at ATCL. And thankfully for us, Marnie also serves as the chair of the Canadian Centre for Diversity and Inclusion. But what's really important for our conversation today also is that you, Marnie, you've dedicated pretty much your entire career and life to creating safe and welcoming and inclusive environment, especially for the 2S LGBTQI plus population, both in a large public and private organizations, at different levels of government, educational institutions, corrections, law enforcement, but also in the broader community. And I know, and you'll talk about that a little bit later, that you were so instrumental in making changes to the legislation as well, both provincially and nationally. So we've got a human rights champion amongst us today, and I'm very honored to have you here. Marnie, let's go straight to my first question for you, because everybody's probably going, who's Marnie? I want to hear from Marnie. So you've got an incredible story to share, and I want to give our listeners a chance to learn more from you. So can you tell us a little bit about who you are, all the facets that make up Marnie Panas?
Hi, Anne-Marie. Thank you for inviting me to be part of this important conversation. And I'm thrilled to meet everybody in this very meaningful way. You know, who am I? Well, I'm a parent of an amazing boy. And, you know, that's who I dedicate my life to, is really creating a future where he gets to grow up in a society where some of these conversations don't have to happen for him. And that's really important for me. And so being a parent, first and foremost, to him and his brother, who is no longer with us, that's really important to me. That's part of my identity. I am also a runner. I'm a partner. I'm a professional. I love to travel the world. I've been to well over 50 countries. And, you know, I happen to also be trans. It's one of many adjectives which describes me. And I think that's really important to remember, is that we are many identities, and I'm not defined by any one, but recognizing that my trans identity is one that, whether I choose to or not, plays a big role of where I can travel to, where I can exist, where it's safe for me, and where it's not. So it's important, because with all of my privileges, you know, I'm white, I'm able-bodied, I look like what society says a woman should look like in a very binary world. Despite all those many privileges that I do have, there are places where I'm not safe. and probably feeling less so today than I've had throughout most of my journey.
And that's really shocking, you know, for me. I mean, I hear it more and more these days, but I'm just still so sad. And sometimes it feels a little bit hopeless that, you know, today in 2023, this place feels less safe for people like you than perhaps it was a little bit before. So we need to like unpack that. We need to help ourselves and our listeners understand really what's going on. And so I have some questions around that to help guide this conversation. And perhaps we can start, Marnie, with your historic role in advancing social justice. You know, you've been doing this work for quite some time now. I mentioned earlier that you were very involved both provincially and federally in advancing human rights. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey there? What happened? And what was the impact of your work in allyship with this community?
Sure. I live very publicly as an open and out transgender woman, partly because I don't have a choice. It's never been a choice not to. It's something that I've had to accept that, you know, and there are many people who choose not to live openly and identify as such. And that's really important. Every journey is unique and valid. Mine was such that just navigating through life as a woman without the adjective of trans just wasn't something that was possible for me. And, you know, I worked at the time for the Stollery Children's Hospital and Alberta Health Services when I transitioned. And it's actually, quite frankly, it's why I was able to transition, because I worked in an environment that was safe and inclusive. And I knew that if I couldn't transition there, if I couldn't truly be me there, I couldn't do it anywhere. So I owe a lot of who I am today by being surrounded by people who cared about me. And that was really, really important. And I was also in a very public role on media all the time. And so people are going to notice, especially when you transition later in life, like I did in my early 40s, where, you know, your hair changes, your clothes change, your makeup, how you present to the world, you know, the washroom that you use change, people are going to notice. And so it really involves having to renegotiate every area of my life. So that's what started me also in my role. I started to accept that, you know, I'm part of a broader community. I'm part of a wide community within Canada and the world. And being visible is a privilege that I have, actually. It can be costly, but it's also an incredible privilege that other people don't get to be. And so, you know, seeing me being visible, being a professional woman who's doing some great work and working with like great organization like CCDI and currently with ATCO, to have, you know, parents of trans people seeing somebody successful and happy and living a full, engaging life is really powerful. So I take that privilege quite seriously and being that role model. Where I really started to appreciate that was very early on in my journey, soon after my public transition, where you know, a mom had reached out to me and said, Marnie, I have a trans daughter in kindergarten and the school is making her go to the staff washroom and she has to be escorted. And she, you know, she holds herself all day and is afraid to go. And can you help me? And when somebody asks you a question like that, not stepping in, not providing support isn't an option. I didn't know what to do. But that's okay. We figured things out together. So I started to work with the school board and started to realize that I have a voice, a very strong voice and a platform. I had ability to build relationships with media and building that platform and to use that voice to advocate for people who aren't able to or maybe can't find their voice. And that really started my journey into being more of a public advocate for my community, a community that I have belonged to for decades before I actually ever let anybody else into that secret. Soon after, you know, invited also, you know, we worked through that, invited by the current provincial government at the time to work on the Human Rights Act that would add gender identity and gender expression to Alberta's Human Rights Act. And being in the House for all readings and seeing it finally pass was something that was really powerful for our community. And it just sent a message that, you know, you belong here and we've got you. And then being invited to support the federal government and give testimony at the Senate that would eventually add gender identity and gender expression to Canada's Human Rights Act, and then to the Criminal Code of Canada as well. And then after that, working with the Prime Minister's office in drafting the apology that Prime Minister Trudeau would deliver in the House of Commons to LGBTQ+ people for experiencing discrimination as a result of federal policies and programs over decades. And then to being in the House of Commons and listening to the words and seeing the reaction of people who waited a lifetime to hear those words, I am sorry, was probably one of the most profound moments of my experience in this journey.
Wow. And that journey is incredible, you know, and I think that people who are going through some challenges and trying to find their place, their sense of belonging, their voice are probably really taking a lot from what you just shared. So thank you for doing that. You know, I mentioned earlier that today, like sometimes I can feel quite disillusioned or worried about the state of trans and non-binary inclusion in Canada. We have seen very clearly a surge in hate and bias against people who are trans and non-binary. And with your experience, your deep connection to the issue and to the community, can you give us a sense of the landscape? Why is this happening today? And what's the impact that this is having on community members?
Yeah, it's an important question. This is an important conversation to have. We saw definitely a rise in this type of language and polarized language across many communities who are in the margins and the fringes of society. And because we're small in numbers, it is pretty easy to demonize us and dehumanize us and use and our identities and us as inhuman to distract from policies and programs and politics that people don't want to pay attention to. And so it's really easy to find a target that everybody can get behind. And so that is really scary. We saw that emerge in a lot of the politics in the United States, but you know, we're not immune from that. We can't pat ourselves on the back in Canada and say, oh, we're much better here, because we're not. The truth is, there are people who live in fear and very legitimate fear. And again, when I think about all the privileges that I have, just even this last year in March, I was invited to speak at an International Women's Day event in Calgary. Mm-hmm. And as soon as the word got out that Marnie, a trans woman, is speaking at this event, it blew up online. And the number of hate emails and messages that I personally received, threats to my own safety, so much so that my employer at the time and Calgary Police Services took it seriously enough that they had to do a full risk assessment and had uniformed and ununiformed police escort me into the public library for my own personal safety. And this is something I never had to think about before as often, so blatantly. And you know, I'm always aware which room I enter, where am I safe, where I'm not safe. But when it's that obvious, where you know, police have to be there to support you, and that's with all of my privileges. What about the folks who don't have that kind of support? Mm-hmm. And so that's part of the impact. So we're seeing this rise in anti-trans hate, and particularly directed at children, where we're seeing programs and policies and governments across this country that are looking to essentially eliminate supports and eliminate the existence of trans people in jurisdictions across this country. And it's terrifying. You started the conversation earlier about it feels a little bit hopeless. And to some degree, it does. It's scary. And we're seeing that rise in hate. But then I spend some time with youth, and I spend some time with people who I know, if we can hang on long enough and keep them as safe as long as we can, that attitudes will shift, because children and youth get it at such a level that it takes us adults a lifetime to unlearn and relearn. And I just hope that there isn't too much damage done before they're in a place where they're making the decisions in this country.
That's well said, you know, and talking to the youth and the children really gives us perspective, right? Mm-hmm. Ideally, what is the most important aspects of life and humanity and, you know, compassion and determination, so that people have freedom to be who they are, their authentic self, and feel safe to be that.
And it starts with, you may not understand me. You may not understand my journey. You may not understand, you know, what being transgender is, or gender or sexuality. Though, you know, maybe those are foreign concepts to you, or that you've not had the opportunity to get to know somebody like me. I'm not asking you to be an expert in gender or sexuality. I'm asking you to care. I'm just, you know, if people really came down to the basic, and this is the piece in diversity, equity, inclusion, if we truly taught people to care for one another, care for the human, the differences will work themselves out. But essentially, we want people to care. We don't have to teach people how to care, but to care. And then those differences will start to not be a barrier.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And really, like, just making time to care, like you said, and making time to meet people who are not like you, right? So that you can sort of break down those biases and stereotypes, but in a way that fosters connection, right? Not to be divisive, but to find ways to work together, to have that dialogue and not a debate.
So I honestly, Anne-Marie, a lot of times I talk about that, you know, the most meaningful, effective way to reduce discrimination and to reduce barriers and to mitigate biases is take the time to get to know people who are different than you. Truly get to know a transgender woman. Get to know somebody who survived a residential school and experiences intergenerational trauma. Get to know a woman who wears a hijab. Get to know the human behind any of those labels or identities, because I would argue it is impossible to discriminate against somebody that you like, that you have a real meaningful human connection with. And we need to take the time to truly get to know people who are different than ourselves.
Very well said. And I completely agree with you. I think when I started my work on trying to understand Indigenous communities, that's literally what I did. I just spent days going to Indigenous events and workshops and sessions, just trying to connect with people, trying to understand, not saying anything, just absorbing and connecting and breaking down any potential bias or barriers that I may have. Right? Because as much as I did my undergrad in sociology and I work in community, it's incredible the lack of information, education, and awareness that I had on that topic. And I think it's the same for what we're talking about today, you know, it's like taking a moment to recognize all the things that we don't know about a community. And then as an ally, if I want to be an ally, what are some of the things that I need to do to get out of my comfort zone, to reach out to people, to reach out to community, to do some more reading, to be better informed. And like you said, to unlearn and relearn. I think that's part of the journey for us to really find ways to meaningfully connect and build those relationships and create that inclusion for all.
And what's been important in the way that you described your journey is that, you know, not putting the onus on the one trans person that you know to teach you everything there is about being trans, or one Indigenous person that you know, not putting the emotional labor or expecting that they're going to give of that, because with all the things that are happening in the world around us, there are days that I just do not have gas in my tank left to have these kinds of conversations. And so people need to honor that. There's a lot of work that you can and should be doing on your own as allies to understand the community and learn and go to reputable resources. You know, CCDI has a number of amazing resources that you can do the homework on your own and not put the emotional labor on others to do so. What I'm speaking to is also take the time to get to know Marnie, and maybe you'll connect with me as a parent, as somebody in the professional space, as somebody who's lost a child, as somebody who loves to travel the world, who lives out loud and really is a vivacious, vibrant lover of life. And when you start to connect to me on those levels, being trans just happens to be one of the many things that makes me awesome. But you have to get to know all the other ones and look past my being trans. I want you to see that that's important to me, but there's so many other elements that you need to get to know.
All the ways in which each and every one of us differs, right? Mm-hmm. Yes. And not just focusing on one label or one dimension. I love that. Thank you so much. So, of course, today, you know, we want to recognize the Transgender Day of Remembrance. And at CCDI, it's really important for us to encourage everyone to take a moment to reflect on what this day means. Not just one day of the year, but every day of the year. And there were some interesting stats, and I want to share that with you. In 2020, 259 people in Canada from the 2SLGBTQI+ communities were the target of police-reported hate crimes based on their sexual orientation, the highest rate since 2009, okay? And additionally, 60% of sexual minorities in Canada have experienced sexual or physical assault in their lifetimes. So there's still a pretty high level of social stigma, disinformation, and lack of understanding. And certainly at CCDI, we feel that there's a duty that we have to fight this social stigma and hate. Marnie, based on your experience in the workplace and in the community and working with public institutions to enact change, what would you recommend leaders and peers could do to act in allyship towards trans and non-binary members of our communities?
Sure. You know, before I go there, I want to unpack some of these numbers a little bit as well, because when I think about Transgender Day of Remembrance, and part of the day is to read out the names of people who have lost their lives to violence in the last year. And that's including people who have taken their own lives because of the experiences of stigma, discrimination, and ongoing violence. So it's an important thing. And that list gets longer and longer. What's important in that list is that it's just the mere tip of the iceberg, because you talked about reports to police. In most cases, these aren't reported because police themselves can be a risk. It's very scary to share your own experiences. You don't know if police are going to support you or not. And that's because of the lack of trust towards institutions, including protective services and law enforcement. So they're vastly underreported. People who share that they might be reported incorrectly. When we list the names and read out the names of people who have died in the last year, that's when they've been reported correctly. There's so many where these violent crimes have been reported, but in police, they've been misgendered or misnamed or deadnamed and not recognizing that they are even trans people or not honoring their identities, particularly in many places around the world, including Canada. So when you hear these names and these stats, they're just scratching the surface of the real impact on this community. And thinking back to the work that we did in the updating the Human Rights Act, what was important in that work that it also updated Canada's criminal code was that gender identity and gender expression were added as reportable pieces in recording hate crimes. That wasn't there before. So when you're thinking about, you know, looking back to 2009, gender identity, gender expression, trans people wouldn't have been included in those numbers of hate crimes, because there was no place to report them. So that's only within the last 5 years that that there's even a mechanism to report it. So are those numbers accurate? Absolutely not. So I just wanted to make sure that we unpack that that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, very good context.
Then going back to your question on what employers can do, when we're talking about trans people, we're talking about a number of identities and where people don't know what to do, leaders don't know what to do. So often people say nothing or do nothing because they don't want to do further harm. Doing nothing is harmful. And so doing something's important, but it's okay not to know what to do. And so it might be when you're seeing this anti-hate, and we saw in August a number of protests, or I guess September, a number of protests specifically targeting trans people across this country of Canada. It was hard. It was hard for me to see that. It was hard for my son to know that I was hurting by watching this. And so what we needed was wherever we're employers, we wanted to like, do you still have our back? Do we still belong there? Because that might be the only safe place that we have right now. And so if employers are shying away from these conversations, then that even does further harm. So at the very least, what I would ask leaders to do, or anybody, when they're seeing events like this unfold in the world or in their communities, is to reach out to the people that you know and just ask the question, how are you? I noticed this is happening. How are you doing? That simple act of check-in is a powerful form of allyship. Just to know that I'm seen, that my pain is being observed and honored and recognized. And then the questions, I don't know what to do. What more do I need to know about who you are and your experiences so I can be the best ally that I can, that I can be the best boss, the best sibling, the best parent, the best friend? What do I need to know so I can be better as an ally? And just really open yourself up to those conversations. In some cases, it's, you know, to stand with, stand beside. In many cases, it's to stand in front of us, but to allow the person to guide you in that. And so coming at that with humility, doing nothing isn't an option. Do something. And if it's a simple act of checking in and then taking that, and if that person says, this is what you can do, then do the thing. Actually use your power, use your privilege to advocate for. When you hear jokes or questions that are being said, to stand up and provide the facts and talk about the impact, educate yourself, learn about the impacts and how you can be an ally. Again, great resources here at CCDI that anybody can use to understand how to be a better ally. And so there's a lot of different things that people can do, but do something.
Do something. Yeah. Don't do nothing, right? Be an upstander, not a bystander. I love that. And there's different ways you can show up as an upstander. And I really like your lens, Marnie, because you bring everything back to the humanity of people. The fact that we all humans, that we should all be having human dignity and respect and care for each other. And when that is the foundation and the starting point, then we don't need to divide people. We don't need to politicize things, right? We can just work together and see how we can create a better environment for you and me, for my colleagues, for my clients, for my customers, for the community. And that's how I think it makes sense to live a life as humans on this earth.
Care about the person next to you, and the politics go away of this conversation. And that's what we have to get to. And I think a lot of organizations, a lot of our larger organizations don't want to get involved in the political part of it. But the fact is, these are people's lives that are impacted. Yeah. And these things that are happening around our communities and in our own worlds, impact how we show up in the workplace, how we show up in our communities. I can't just, after a hard day of experiencing oppression and online hate and fearful of walking down the street, take my trans hat off and come into the work as a cis employee. I don't have that privilege. I cannot take that hat off. I am trans all the time. A lot of people can see the violence on TV or can see the protests, feel uncomfortable for a little bit, then walk away from it. I don't have that privilege. I don't get to walk away from it. And so put yourself in that discomfort and start to learn and really thinking about as an organization, as an employer, are your values for sale? Or are you going to stick true to your values? What do your values say? And are you going to stand behind and support of these communities? Or is it because are you afraid to lose some customers because now you're going to stand behind trans people? Well, then you must be willing to sell your values. And that's something that you have to reconcile with.
Very powerful words. It's almost, you know, like aha moments maybe for some folks to say, okay, how do I align what I believe, what I value with the work that I do? Lots of reflection, I think, required in many workplaces across Canada. So let me ask you, Marnie, one last question. You know, as we wrap up this podcast, and I know we could talk for a lot longer, but can you share with us any final words of wisdom for folks who are out there and just really trying to like take in what you just said and trying to make a change?
When you limit your interactions, what you know about me by one word, by being trans, you or anybody else that's in your life, you're missing out on amazing gifts. People who have a beautiful view of the world, who are engaging, who are exciting, who are part of this community, part of your workplace. There's such an untapped potential in your relationships, in your friendships, when you can look past that trans identity. And again, take the time to get to know me. You know, reach out. Invite me into your circles. And I think, you know, if there are leaders on this call, thinking about who are you mentoring? Who are you sponsoring? Look around the room. Do they look like you? Do your mentees look like you? I challenge each and every person, whether you're a leader, whether you're in community, you know, mentorship goes up, down, sideways, across, is to mentor somebody who doesn't look like you, who doesn't reflect you in some meaningful way, and be intentional about that. And those are the ways that we can get to breaking down some of those barriers for your trans and non-binary colleagues to elevate their voices in community.
Wonderful words. Thank you so much again. I think I've learned a lot. I know I've learned a lot. And I hope that our listeners have as well. Take good care. Thanks, Marnie. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Leader Talk Season 2. This podcast is brought to you by the Canadian Centre for Diversity and Inclusion. To stay up to date with Leader Talks, or to find and listen to previous episodes, please visit ccdi.ca/podcast.